Hello and welcome to Landward, readings of place and season. I'm Catherine Young. I live, farm, and write in Richland County in the Driftless area of Wisconsin. Today, I'll be reading part two of my essay, Smoke, my reaction and experience of the wildfire ash that began to cover our Midwestern skies in the fall of 2020. It was published in the Journal About Place in spring 2021 in their issue called Geographies of Justice. Part two of Smoke. Last time I read how growing up in the largest coal mining valley in the world, we had to accept that we were the place that produced the coal for the rest of the nation, and we had to live breathing smoke. I'm going to pick up on a scene I read last time. There are memories of that time and place I'm now able to make sense of, to give voice to. Here's the one that keeps coming back to me from first grade. I'm walking the slate sidewalks to school. It is night and it is raining. All of the street lights are on and I can see the lights in the houses I walk past. The colored leaves are pasted to the black, wet slate and it is slippery to go downhill in our leather shoes in the pouring rain that doesn't seem to end under this night sky. It is raining. And it is hard to breathe. But now I realize, as I look back into this memory, it isn't night after all. It is day. A fog has capped in the smoke of the valley, and day has turned to night. Everything is blurry and dark. What I didn't know then was that the rain enveloped us in sulfuric acid, acid rain. It saturated our air in concentrations that caused paint to peel from houses and cars, created holes in clothing hung on laundry lines to dry. I remember something about being at home a lot that fall and winter, frequently ill with a cough and infections. I remember looking at enormous-sized Life magazines from the 1940s collected and stored in our attic. I couldn't read them. All I could do was turn pages and look for the very few advertisements colored with ink. The pages were huge and glossy, and beneath their glossy sheen, the paper had yellowed from our poisoned air. I remember, too, how my firefighter father began collapsing and all too frequently spent time in the hospital under an oxygen tent. How he was not home very much from all the sickness he experienced. Like many stories of families in times of illness, in our family, we were left on our own. Although I have to imagine our valley of 150,000 people, there were many families believing that they had to get through it on their own, never once naming the responsibility of the coal producers, because the assembled population of immigrants and their progeny were there to run the industry of coal. No one would dare question what sustained our valley. In my adulthood, I read the article The Fog by Burton Ruscha from The New Yorker, September 30, 1950. It is an elegantly written, terrifying piece of journalism documenting what occurred in Donora, Pennsylvania in 1948 when a temperature inversion in the mountains of southwestern Pennsylvania created a blanketing fog capping in the smoke from the coal and coke-burning steel mills and the many coal-burning locomotives. Over a six-day period, 2,000 people were struck down and 20 died. It's this visual image of the locomotive that gives me the shivers. And that's a quote. At about 8:30 on a Friday morning, one of Donora's eight physicians, Dr. Ralph W. Kohler, a tense, stocky man of 48, stepped to his bathroom window for a look at the weather. It was, at best, unchanged. He could see nothing but a watery waste of rooftops, islanded in fog. As he was turning away, a shimmer of movement in the distance caught his eye. It was a freight train creeping along the riverbank just south of town, and the sight of it shook him. He had never seen anything quite like it before. "It was the smoke," he says. They were firing up for the grade, and the smoke was belching out, but it didn't rise. I mean, it didn't go up at all. It just spilled out over the lip of the stack like black liquid, like ink or oil, and rolled down to the ground and lay there. though the coal-burning locomotives of the many railroads of our valley had gone the way of the dinosaurs by 1964, the descriptions in the piece were all too familiar to me. The darkness, the coughing, people in their houses struggling to breathe. No state or federal government action to rescue the people in our valley or even admit what had happened. Now, in a new millennium, when teenagers and adults read and act out steampunk, I recoil. I believe they imagine the plumes of smoke in Miyazaki's animations from steam-powered retro-Victorian machines as innocuous. They forget, or never know, the hidden realities of coal used to produce it. Land on fire, skies occluded from smoke, people gasping for air. Their fictional steam does not include carbon dioxide released, replacing oxygen and changing the Earth's climate. The news we received this fall about out-of-control wildfires in the western United States was presented as if these events are whims of nature, as if fire suppression and lack of careful zoning has played no role, as if climate change, brought on by burning fossil fuels such as coal, has nothing to do with it. The results of our choices and our inactions to preserve environmental integrity is a travesty of denial. All I see is connection. The deadly smoke from our coal mining and coal burning valley was part of the original industrial engine. The ethos that enslaved our valley sent smoke and ash out across the world. It kept the burning going. What happened to us in our coal-driven reality had a cause and could have been eliminated with the choice, above all, to protect environment. Because of the will of the people in my country in the early 1970s, clean air and clean water became a priority. With the environmental movement and the beginnings of a Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act, we looked forward to a transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. We began designing solar and wind installations. In my native valley, coal mining diminished. Mines were flushed with a slurry of coal and water to put out the fires. Construction workers were hired with federal dollars to level the Massum column dumps and end the burning. And with the air free of smoke from fossil coal, we could breathe. Now, in an era of both recognition and denial of climate change, I think of the people on the west coast of my country who struggled to breathe, faced complete destruction of their homes and way of life. I feel a resurgence of sadness and anger born of devastation and denial. We need to recognize we are part of this earth, of its climate. 50 years ago, we redefined environment and began a new direction toward a work of renewable energy. Just as it took the will and work of the many to create an industrial revolution, we, the many, can use will and hard work to build a new way of life, one that doesn't include fossilized fuel or thinking. We need to clear the air of stale and acrid words. It is time to end the burning, so we can again see the stars. You have been listening to part two of Smoke, read by me, Catherine Young, its author. It was published in About Place Journal in their Geographies of Justice, Issue 3, Volume 4, in May 2021. This is Catherine Young for Landward. Thanks for listening. Podcasts of this reading will be available at wdrt.org.